Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and SiriusXM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. An important conversation we're having tonight. Some of you may have friends, loved ones, or you may be the one living with sickle cell disease. Tonight's conversation will highlight the latest research for those who are affected. It is Medical Monday, and we're giving you insight into sickle cell disease. It is World Sickle Cell Day. We have a doctor in the house. We have a gentleman in who has been touched by sickle cell disease. And if you're one of those, we'd like to hear from you tonight. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open. Our topic of discussion tonight, again, sickle cell disease. In studio with us is Dr. James Taylor VI. He is the director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University Hospital. And Howard Woolley, he's a sickle cell advocate and who has been affected by it through loved ones. And we'll talk to him and Dr. Taylor tonight. Also, we'd like to talk with you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Taylor, I mentioned it is World Sickle Cell Day. We also often know we will put much highlight on issues and topics on the day, but we know that this is 365 that you are doing what you can to combat this disease. Can you bring us up to date on the latest research in terms of trying to quell this disease?
Okay. So sickle cell disease turns out to be the United States' most common genetic disease, affecting about 100,000 Americans. We currently only have two FDA-approved drugs. The most recent one was approved last July, about a year ago. The other drug is called hydroxyurea. And we do have one cure that is potentially available to patients. It's called stem cell transplantation. You have to have a sibling, a brother or sister, who's a match, if you will. And it turns out only one in four siblings will be a match. Outside of that, we really don't have a lot of treatments for sickle cell disease.
Why only one drug approved, Dr. Taylor?
It's two drugs. One was approved in 1995, and the last one was 2017. I really think it is related to the investment we've made in sickle cell disease research. There's a lot of research and development that goes on. It's expensive. It costs money. Takes you away from patients to do research. And sickle cell research really only started in 1972 for patients. And actually, it was started here at Howard University in 1972. My predecessor, Roland B. Scott, very prominent physician, made immeasurable contributions. He lobbied Congress for 20 years to get the National Sickle Cell Control Act passed in 1972. And that was the first focus on patient care and clinical trials.
Howard Woolley, your wife passed from sickle cell. We often know those who are sick are taking the brunt of it, but family members are also in many ways walking right along with that. Tell us about your experience with your wife and her illness.
I met Gail Campbell Woolley at Syracuse University in 1979. And the first time she had a hospital-level sickle cell crisis and had to go into Upstate Medical Center, I think she was afraid that I was going to walk away. And she tried to shoo me out of her hospital room. And I just told her that she looked like a princess to me. And we bonded in that moment. And 2 years later, on Valentine's Day, we were married. And during that period, it was pre her getting on the drug that Dr. Taylor talked about, hydroxyurea. We were pretty much guaranteed to go into hospital emergency rooms with excruciating pain at least 5 to 6 times a year. And the pain Gail described as like someone jabbing needles into her joints, and needed high doses of hospital-administered narcotics in order to quell that pain.
Dr. Taylor, Mr. Woolley is describing some of the symptoms, obviously shooting pain. So how would you know that you may have sickle cell. Are there other symptoms besides shooting pain, which is in and itself is enough?
Fortunately, in this country in 2018, you should already know shortly after you're born. And again, started here at Howard University, Roland B. Scott started screening infants in Washington, D.C. for sickle cell disease. And that trend has become national and everyone is screened. There are occasionally people who are outside of our medical system. I've probably diagnosed 4 in the last year, 18 months, with sickle cell disease, people who didn't know that they had it, usually born somewhere else and moved to the United States.
And so can it come on beyond when you're born, or you're born with it?
You're born with it. It's a genetic disease, but starting at about a year of age, it changes over a lifetime. Oftentimes in the first year of life, you'll have pain in your fingers. The child will suck on their fingers. That's how we used to diagnose it in the 70s. But exactly as Mr. Woolley described, how would you know you're having a pain crisis? Can be writhing on the bed, or you can be sitting there calmly, but in excruciating pain.
Are any specific people more apt to get sickle cell from a race, gender?
So you have to be of African ancestry, and that's the way I describe it. Actually, somebody in my family has sickle cell disease. You wouldn't
expect
it.
So that means you have a gene there somewhere, right?
Yeah, I have. Somebody in my family has African ancestry. Mm-hmm. So the sickle cell mutation arose in Africa, and if you have sickle cell trait, you are protected from malaria. Malaria will kill children under 5. So if you have sickle cell trait, you're not going to die. If you don't have sickle cell trait, you might die from malaria. And for that reason, the prevalence of sickle cell trait has risen very high in West Africa. And that also means that some children are born with sickle cell disease, and that's not a good thing. And the downside of the benefit of sickle cell trait is that some people have the disease, and it results in these excruciating, painful crises.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Today is Sickle Cell Day. We are focusing on that issue today, or tonight, rather. In studio, our guest is Dr. James Taylor, the sixth. He's director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University Hospital. And Howard Woolley, he's a sickle cell advocate. Mr. Woolley's wife passed after battling that disease. She passed in 2015. Mr. Woolley, for those who are out there who are maybe new to finding out their loved one has the disease and they have to care for them and they have to be there for them, what is it like for the caregiver in the family, that who's closest to the victim? What kind of advice could you give to loved ones who are sort of dealing with this as their loved one is suffering from it?
First off, I would say I feel for you. My heart goes out to you. When your loved one is in sickle cell pain and you're watching them with all of that anguish, it's very tough. What I would say is you're likely to have to go into an emergency room. The people on call that night will have various levels of knowledge of sickle cell, maybe none at all. And you need to be persistent in your most persuasive way to make sure that your loved one gets the care that they need. Oftentimes, particularly if you're in a hospital that you're not familiar with, sometimes there's someone in the hematology department who knows something about it, and they'll get the hematologists involved. But there's a whole issue in the sickle cell community about the pushback that you'll receive for the amounts of medically administered narcotics you need to cut your pain, because it's higher than what the normal person can handle. Gail used to say on those pain charts of 1 to 10, she said, She said, my 7 will be a 15 for the average person. Yeah.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Again, our conversation tonight is centering on sickle cell disease. Let's go to the phone lines. Barbara is calling from Germantown. Go right ahead, Barbara, with your question or your comment.
Yes, good evening. I, too, have a child that was born with sickle cell anemia at birth. In my belly, I was already told that she would have this disease. So many people are so has very little knowledge of what sickle cell is. And I listening to the comments that has already come across the radio, I agree he's 100% correct as far as when they go into crisis and the care that they need. And it's a wear and tear on the people's bodies and the family as well. My daughter currently right now is in one of John Hopkins Hospital, and she's about to have heart surgery to remove a mass or a clot near her heart that a port was placed inside of her because of so many transfusions. Unfortunately, we've had several transfusions, and they're always in pain. I can't even count the times that she has been hospitalized.
Barbara, I want to let Dr. Taylor sort of jump into your question a little bit, and also your situation. Barbara's talking about obviously her daughter, mm-hmm. and these are the repercussions, I guess, what she is talking about of having sickle cell.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, Dr. Taylor, about what happens to your body once
you
have sickle cell?
Well, so the major problem is the red cells are abnormally shaped and they clog up small capillaries. Could be in your fingers, could be in the lungs, all over the body. That results in pain because you deprive tissues of oxygen. Barbara is actually speaking. Sometimes we use transfusion therapy, and so her daughter's had a catheter placed so that she can have frequent access to the intravenous system and receive transfusions. The downside of that is that sometimes there are complications. And I'm frequently known for telling people every time you come into the hospital, there's a chance something will go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So clots form on the end of catheters sometimes, not very often, known complication. And sounds like she's in a good place getting appropriate treatment, but it doesn't make it any easier for family members, as Mr. Woolley can attest to.
Now, do two parents have to have the sickle cell trait for a child to be born with it?
Yes. One parent could have sickle cell disease and the other parent could have trait, or both parents could have trait, or as I also know, something else. There's hemoglobin C trait out there. There's beta thalassemia trait, all sorts of other things.
So again, does that mean everyone should be tested even after? I know you said when you're a baby, you're tested, but you still should be tested again?
Yeah. So I have an interesting story. I just hired somebody as a research associate who graduated from Howard University, and he doesn't know if he had sickle cell trait when we hired him. He's been tested. He doesn't have it, but he had forgotten. You know, oftentimes when you don't have trait or you have trait, your parents don't continue that on.
Before we jump over to the other side, Dr. Taylor, I know that you're going to be on this panel, this symposium at Howard University tomorrow. Can you talk
yes.
a little bit about that?
It's our observance of World Sickle Cell Day. We're focusing on legislative advocacy. We have a number of people from Congress. Mr. Woolley will be there as a speaker, and a hematologist from Johns Hopkins Hospital will be joining us.
And that will be from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m.
tomorrow,
correct? All right, so folks, you should get to that. If sickle cell is your concern, if you know someone who has it, if loved ones, friends, someone that you care for, we're going to continue this conversation. Tracy, stay on the line. Phyllis, you stay there. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Insight will continue right after this. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 also. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm is next on 96.3 WHUR. 202-319-7810. Our topic, sickle cell disease. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, today is Sickle Cell Day, and that means the focus is on sickle cell disease, and that is our focus tonight on Insight. Some of us may know someone with sickle cell. Some of us may have loved ones with sickle cell. Some of us may be suffering from that. And tonight we're going to talk about sickle cell disease, and we'd like to hear from you. If you have some insights, some comments, please give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. There will be a symposium held at Howard University tomorrow, June 19th, from 4 p.m., at the Howard University's Hospitals Tower Auditorium. Is sickle cell legislation and advocacy. So that is something you may want to be part of. Joining us in studio tonight to further this conversation is Howard Woolley. He's a sickle cell advocate, and Dr. James Taylor VI. He's director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University. Again, phone lines are open, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines and Tracy calling from Brandywine. Go right ahead, Tracy.
Question.
Yes.
The first is, how long after a child is born is it determined that they have sickle cell? The second portion is, I have a granddaughter who is in the process of trying to get the stem cell transplant. Exactly what is that process, and what is the success rate, and how long is the process?
Okay. Thank you, Tracy. Dr. Taylor, you want to jump on that?
So newborn screening is usually ideally done in the first 48 hours of life before the child ever leaves the hospital. It's a simple heel stick. They test for a variety of diseases. Every state now screens for hemoglobinopathies, which is where the class of disease that sickle cell disease falls in. If you miss that, testing can be done at any time. At Howard University Hospital, every Wednesday morning, we do sickle cell trait screening. But again, we've picked up four or five people with disease who didn't know that they had the disease in the last year. Second question was on stem cell transplantation. So this is complex stuff, but not terribly. So the best chances for a successful transplant are a matched sibling. That means a brother or sister. And there's a 1 in 4 chance that each sibling could be a match. You've got to have the same two copies of chromosome 6, one from your mother and one from your father, that match your sibling. Okay? That testing takes a few weeks, and that is the plus or minus go forward or not. Without an HLA match or a half match, which would be one copy of chromosome 6 that matches, the transplant is much riskier. Then it also gets into how the transplant is done. We can wipe out the bone marrow. The downside to that, though, is that if the transplant doesn't engraft, meaning goes to the bone marrow and starts growing, it's incompatible with life. So there's probably a 10% risk of dying with a myeloablative transplant. And that's been the dilemma, especially with children with sickle cell disease. What parent, I can give them a 99% chance that their child will live to be 18. Okay. And what parent would want to take a 10% chance that their child would die in the first year of life giving them a transplant? That's the dilemma. There is a more experimental version of this where we don't wipe out the bone marrow completely. As the cells dip down to almost zero, we pour in stem cells, but they come back.
So it sounds like, too, it would be hard to give Tracy kind of a number on success rate.
It would be hard to give her a number. Yeah. I think I've been looking at this with the National Marrow Donor Program. The long-term survival, mostly children, is about 75% going out beyond 5 years.
Howard Woolley, thank you so much, Tracy, for your call, and best of luck with everything with your young daughter. Howard, how old was your wife when she passed?
Gail was 58 years old, and as they say on the cover of Gail's autobiography, Soar, she outlived the life expectancy that she was told when she was born in 1957. She was told she would be lucky to make it to 34, and she lived to 58.
And why do you think that was? Was it availability to treatment, improved treatment? Attitude on her part, all of the above?
It as you say, it was kind of all of the above. Gail was so knowledgeable about her disease. When we would go into meetings with her doctors, she would say what her hemoglobin count was, her hematocrit, and the other things. And in fact, as she refers to in SOAR, one of her doctors she refers to as her favorite primary care physician used to say to Gail, he would let her talk at first, and when Gail would come in, he'd say, "Okay, Dr. Gail, tell me your diagnosis." That's how warm their relationship was. But she was on top of it. She was very health conscious. I hope I say this the right way, but when she was in college, she took a test for a high-level security at a government agency, because she's from D.C. and she wanted to do an internship. And you know, when they asked, "Have you ever used any kind of drugs, you know, including marijuana?" and she said no, and that the lie detector test came back that she was telling the truth. The people at the agency were floored, and I used to joke with her that the people I grew up in New York, they might have been able to pass that test too, but their answer might have been a little different.
So, Dr. Taylor, first of all, let me give the number out again: 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about a very serious topic tonight, and one that needs more sunshine on, so to speak, sickle cell. In studio with us is Dr. James Taylor. He's director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University Hospital. Also joining us is Howard Woolley, who you just heard from. He's a sickle cell advocate. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Taylor, Howard sort of was talking about his wife. Maybe what helped her live a longer life than expected was her attitude, how she took care of herself. Can you talk a little bit about, you're diagnosed with sickle cell, right? What can you do to increase or better your quality of life? Is there anything sort of new under the sun, even for those who don't have sickle cell? Is it the same process?
I think one of the important things to do is get good quality care. And I think Mr. Woolley would agree with that. I've known the Woolley family for 8 or 9 years,
almost a
decade.
But is that difficult, Dr. Taylor? Because we can say we all want good quality care, right? But all of us don't have access to it.
Well, I have to say, at Howard University Hospital, we'll see all comers. There are some insurance issues, but I'm confident that we can work through them. We do not see a quote-unquote payer mix that is advantageous for the hospital. That we're not here for that purpose. So I think finding a hematologist is kind of the center of your care, but you need other specialists. And a good hematologist will have a quiver of specialists that they can refer to.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Phyllis is calling from Capitol Heights. Go right ahead, Phyllis, with your question or your comment.
Yes, I was diagnosed with sickle cell trait when I was about 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I was a young girl, I've always had issues with this sudden muscle aches in my legs particularly. My dad took me back and forth to the doctor to try to figure out what it was. They never could identify it.
Mm-hmm.
A few years back, I actually asked my primary care physician, you know, I know there's not supposed to be any symptoms with the trait, but he said in some extreme cases,
mm-hmm.
that there could be, and I'm just wondering what the doctor thinks about that.
Okay, thank you so much for your question, Phyllis. Dr. Taylor?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Not an uncommon question. I have had two or three inquiries about this, some from out of town. People are going to come and see us here at Howard University.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things to work through and some alternative diagnoses when you see literally thousands of patients like myself or screen 4,000 or 5,000 people for sickle cell trait every year. You start to see other rare things. So I would encourage her to come and see us at Howard University Hospital, or another place, a good place to go is Johns Hopkins. Occasionally, we do see people who have these complaints. It's not always sickle cell trait, but it could be.
Howard, what does a family member, someone who's close to a person with sickle cell, what do they need?
They need to, from time to time, self-assess. And I was very fortunate.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, Phyllis, for your call.
I was very lucky. Gail was so self-sufficient, and she was very self-aware. And so she knew, like, for instance, every year at Final Four weekend, I'd go out of town with my buddies that I grew up with, and we'd try to play basketball, and then we'd watch the games. Well, in 2014, a year before she passed, she had just, as she described in SOAR, she had just come out of Johns Hopkins emergency room. She had been airlifted there from Brazil because we were on a trip and she had sickle cell crisis. And so I just assumed that I wasn't going to be able to go off to Charlotte and be with my friends. And I found out that she had recruited one of our closest and dearest friends to be with her for that weekend so that I could get away and have my...
So she understood.
She understood.
Pressures and that you needed sort of a break, charge.
She absolutely
did.
And
did you realize once you got away how much you needed that break, or did you know even while you were...
I knew I needed it, but I always tried to make sure that she never felt that I needed it, even when I did. Mm-hmm. But she clearly saw right through it.
I've read that portion of the book, and from his description, there was so much he was doing in Brazil. He was calling the embassy. He was calling back to Washington, to the State Department. You wouldn't believe how many tentacles he had into getting her back to the United States, and even weathering a punctured tire on the tarmac that delayed her transport back to the United States by another 2 days.
Yes.
He probably did need a break.
And and again, the book that Dr. Taylor was referring to is SOAR, a memoir written by Howard Woolley's wife, Gail Woolley, prior to her passing. Again, it's called SOAR, a memoir. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our conversation tonight is on the topic of sickle cell. Lorna and Jeff, we will get to you right after we return from this quick break. Our conversation will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment on The Daily Drum. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment, and tonight we are talking about sickle cell disease. It is sickle cell, World Sickle Cell Day, rather, and we're talking about it today. But again, this is a topic that could be talked about every day. 202-319-7810 is the phone line. We'd like to hear from you if you have questions, comments, concerns. In studio with us now are two people who know a lot about this disease through experience, through professional experience. Dr. James Taylor VI is director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease here at Howard University, working at the Howard University Hospital. And Howard Woolley, he's a sickle cell advocate. Mr. Woolley's wife, Gail, passed in 2015 after battling with sickle cell disease. Mr. Woolley's wife, Gail Woolley, also the author of a autobiography, SOAR, a memoir. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Again, the phone lines are open. Let's go back to those phone lines. And Jeff is calling from Brandywine. Go right ahead, Jeff, with your question or your comment.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is, what is the success rate / survival rate after stem cell transplant? And my second part of my question is, what options are there in lieu of the transplant? Is there available for a young child at the age of 3?
Okay, thank you so much for your question, Jeff. Dr. Taylor?
So at age 3, I guess I would consider transplant if there were a matched sibling, but I'd want to have an open-ended discussion. Again, I've looked up these numbers. I've been speaking to the National Marrow Donor Program in Minneapolis. It's only about 75% 5-year, 6-year extended survival after a stem cell transplant. And again, there are different types of transplants and different ways to do them. Generally speaking, if you're looking at wiping out the bone marrow, there's a 10% risk of dying from the complications of just giving that chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. So again, with a 3-year-old, I'd really want to look at disease severity if there was something that was really life-threatening before I jumped into that. But it's possible. Other than transplant, there are other options, as Mr. Woolley alluded to. Hydroxyurea is a drug that's been approved since 1995 for the treatment of sickle cell disease, especially for the pain crises that result in hospitalizations. It's really been a dramatic drug for many but not all patients. The other new drug that's available is called L-glutamine. It reduces pain crises in a different way. It can be used with hydroxyurea. It's relatively new. It was approved in 2017.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about sickle cell tonight. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Lorna is calling from the district. Go right ahead, Lorna, with your question or your comment.
Oh, I have a comment and a question. I was telling the young lady that I was, as a student at Howard University, I got sick and somehow ended up in the emergency room. And then through a series of tests, they were able to tell me that I have the sickle cell trait. But the issue was somehow I don't have the disease because I was able to retain my fetal hemoglobin, they said.
Mm-hmm.
So I never quite transition over to the disease. So they were starting a series of studies, and every month I had to come there to give some blood for them to do work. And we ran into a roadblock because I'm from a different country, and my father wasn't in the country, and my mother's in another state, so they couldn't get all the information needed.
Where are you from?
The studies. I'm from Jamaica.
Jamaica. Okay. I'm just going to jump in, Lorna, because I saw your name pop up. My wife's name is Lorna, and her folks are from Jamaica, so I sort of wanted to ask you that. But I want to go right ahead.
Yeah, so I never had it. The only time it came, I was doing this study for a good 6 months. I would come up to Howard Hospital because I was staying at the dorm in Meridian,
mm-hmm.
and would come once a month for draw blood so they could do the studies. But then I got tired of the coming in and I don't like needles, so mm-hmm. I ended up quitting and didn't follow through. The issue came up again now when it's marriage. And, you have to do the blood, Connecticut required blood work. You have to do a blood test or something. So they said we both have to get tested because since I have the trait, we want to make sure the kids won't get it.
Right.
So far, we were lucky none of the kids have it, but I just haven't gone any further from there.
Well, Lorna, and I didn't mean to cut you off earlier. I apologize for that. But I wanted to ask Dr. Taylor something off of the points that you were making, if I can. And Lorna was talking about being diagnosed with the sickle cell trait. Can you describe the difference between having sickle cell disease and sickle cell trait?
Sure. Sickle cell trait means we all have 2 copies of every gene. Somebody with sickle cell trait has 1 mutated sickle hemoglobin and 1 normal hemoglobin. Generally speaking, that doesn't result in disease. And again, in Africa, it will protect you from severe malaria that will kill you. There are some health issues related to sickle cell trait, relatively minor, but you need a hematologist who knows what they're doing to look for these things. But generally speaking, not a disease. The disease comes when you get 2 copies of mutated hemoglobin together, and you're anemic. And again, these sickled cells clog up your blood vessels and deprive tissue of oxygen, and it hurts.
So if one has sickle cell trait and the other has sickle cell trait, even though they don't have sickle cell, is it more likely than that a child will be born with each
pregnancy, a 1 in 4 chance.
A child will be born with sickle cell.
With sickle cell disease.
Sickle cell disease.
50% chance that you'll have a child with sickle cell trait, and a 1 in 4 chance that you'll have a completely normal child.
So if you have sickle cell trait, it is really highly important that whoever your mate ends up being, you really have
Very
to have that
important.
Conversation.
I would expand on that and say in 2018, in vitro fertilization is a great way to fertilize eggs in the test tube and pick the ones that don't have the disease. Very cost effective. Probably $10,000, but I'll tell you, in the District of Columbia, we spend $120,000 a year per patient per year to treat these people with complications of sickle cell disease.
And so when we're talking about those numbers, Howard Woolley, that means funding will always help that. If you have more funding, you can treat more people, you can do more research. We know funding is important, right? But the question is, in terms of sickle cell, is it getting the funding that it needs? Does it lag far behind many of these other diseases that are receiving funding?
Sure. I've heard some of the experts talk about this and compare the sickle cell population to the populations of some other diseases that are common here in the United States. And in the case of, I believe it's cystic fibrosis, is a huge, endowment, et cetera. And the private philanthropy for sickle cell just has not caught up. And I would really encourage members of your audience who have means to engage in this area, because each dollar in sickle cell really helps to improve patient care. It can help research into long-term cures. And I had a very good corporate career, and I know what it's like to be, the chair of the committee for the most popular philanthropy in your area. It makes you be a real big shot, and you feel great. I've been there, done that, seen the movie, wrote it. This is an area where you're not going to get a lot of fanfare, and it may not make you prominent in your community, but you could change lives. And if you can make the life of this little girl that I saw at the sickle cell conference that Dr. Taylor and I were at this weekend, if you could change her life and make her not have to go through the things that Gail went through, several hip replacements, knee replacements, all these kinds of things, you're doing something really important.
Dr. Taylor, how do you increase funding? Is there a successful template? Are there other diseases out there that we are trying to combat where funding was low and then somehow it increased through a certain kind of push? I mean, do you see others out there to where you say we can mimic that to get to where we want to be?
Absolutely. As Mr. Woolley alluded to, cystic fibrosis is a very comparable disease in one sense. It affects about 33,000 people, mostly people of European descent. Mm-hmm. It has 8 FDA-approved drugs. The funding has been, from the federal government, has been very continuous, and probably if you work it out, research dollars per patient is about $3,500 per patient per year. Sickle cells hovered about $1,000 for 20 years since I've been doing this. It is very disheartening when you recognize that sickle cell disease is 3 times more common. Mm-hmm. And, 8 FDA-approved drugs for all different forms of cystic fibrosis. There are 2 forms of sickle cell disease where we have no approved drugs. That's 20% of the sickle cell patients. That means 20,000 Americans who I can't offer any treatment to.
Does race have anything to do with it? Because if it affects African Americans overwhelmingly, does that have a place in the lack of funding?
I think it does. I well, clearly, if you go back to 1972 and look at the work of Roland B. Scott, I am on a daily basis amazed by the things that he put up with and what he did to even bring funding to sickle cell. Cystic fibrosis funding started easily 50 years prior to that, funding through the federal government. And when you do research, it's a combination of federal research dollars, but also private philanthropy. And I think Mr. Woolley and I agree on this, that maybe philanthropy is the way to go. You can fund anything you want if you give.
In our final seconds, Mr. Woolley, did your wife share anything with you in terms of what she wanted in terms of how sickle cell was addressed, whether or not it was research or how you deal with folks? Did she share anything like that with you?
She said she wrote SOAR to raise awareness of sickle cell anemia. She said she wanted to eradicate the disease so no one would have to go through with what she went through. And she wanted to raise funding for research for a cure and funding for patient care.
Here's Howard Woolley. We hope that all of that comes to fruition. It may not be soon, but hopefully we're going down the road to do that. He is a sickle cell advocate. And again, he's here speaking about his wife, Gail Campbell Woolley, autobiography, SOAR, a memoir. Ms. Woolley passed on 2015, but we thank you so much, Howard Woolley, for being here, sharing her story and yours as well. And Dr. James Taylor, the sixth director of the Center for Sickle Cell Disease at Howard University Hospital. Again, Sickle Cell Legislation and Advocacy, a symposium tomorrow, June 19th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at Howard University Hospital's Tower Auditorium. That's the Daily Drum on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. For this Monday, June 18th, I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Up next, The Connection with Lorna Newton. Have a great night.